It's Thursday, October 29th, and this is VOA's International Edition. I'm Jim Stevenson in Washington. Hello and welcome. Coming up, U.S. Secretary of State John Kerry prepares for talks on Syria. Iran will take part. Republican presidential candidates prepare for another debate.
Since the earthquake has hit primarily the areas which are very remote and very difficult to access even under normal circumstances.
Also ahead, the difficulty of reaching earthquake victims in remote northern Afghanistan and Pakistan. Adele is back with her first new album in years. It's all on today's International Edition. U.S. Secretary of State John Kerry says talks in Vienna on Syria's future are the most promising opportunity in years for reaching a political solution in the war-torn country that has suffered 4.5 years of, quote, nonstop horror. Kerry spoke Wednesday at the Carnegie Endowment for International Peace in Washington.
Military operations are but one of the many components of what the coalition is doing. We're working hard to counter Daesh's propaganda and to deter potential foreign fighters from joining it. In partnership with the UAE, we have established a center in Abu Dhabi that is offering positive messages across the region on the internet and all through social media, talking about politics, religion, and the responsibilities of faith. And we're striving to cut off Daesh's funding so that it becomes bankrupt politically just as it is morally. But ultimately, to defeat Daesh, we have to end the war in Syria. And that is America's goal.
Kerry said the United States is taking a two-pronged approach to Syria. One is the diplomatic route. Preliminary meetings in Vienna are expected to begin later Thursday. The formal talks convene Friday and will be attended by Russia, Turkey, Saudi Arabia, and the United States. Iran also will be taking part in an international summit about the Syrian conflict for the first time. The second prong is intensifying the counter-Islamic State campaign that's being conducted by a U.S.-led coalition. Kerry said the coalition will be resupplying moderate fighters in northern Syria. For more, VOA's Catherine Gibson spoke with Maha Yaha, a senior fellow at the Carnegie Endowment.
He made two very important statements, which are quite critical and give us a sense of the thinking of the American administration on key challenges in the region. One is there can be no political settlement with Assad in power. This is not the first time that he said it, but reinforcing it, particularly on the eve of the Vienna talks, is very important. The other one is that there will be no redivision of the or renegotiation of the boundaries of states in the region on the basis of identity, i.e. on the sectarian issue. And I think this is fundamental because this is one of the biggest phobias for people in the region, the idea that state systems are disintegrating and that they will be replaced by homogeneous, self-enclosed enclaves. Yes. He also made the argument that actually such systems are a big win for ISIS.
Right.
So defeating ISIS also means defeating this kind of a mentality.
We are on the eve of the Vienna talks now, and we know that the Iranians will participate. What will that mean for U.S. involvement in the talks?
I think it's important. I think it's important that the Iranians are participating. I don't think anybody is under any illusion that this means that things are somehow, there's going to be a magic solution that tomorrow morning we're going to wake up and they're going to tell us, or the day after we wake up and, you know, there's a political settlement there. But I think it's very important that the parties, I mean, there's an acknowledgement, a direct acknowledgement that Iran is directly involved in Syria. It has troops on the ground. It's providing support to Assad. It has actually sustained Assad up to this point. So it makes sense for them to be there. There's not going to be peace. There cannot be a political settlement in Syria if Iran is not party to that settlement.
But what does Iranian participation mean for Saudi Arabia's place in the talks? Won't that anger or isolate them?
It won't isolate them. It may anger them, but also Saudi Arabia needs to recognize that Iran is a player and that if really, truly the interest is to end the violence in Syria and therefore end the violence in the region. Syria is the epicenter of a lot of the conflicts that we are seeing today. So if there is seriousness about ending the violence, you need to involve all the parties who have that their fingers in the pie.
Earlier Wednesday, U.S. lawmakers questioned the prospects for progress in multinational talks about Syria's political future, considering the gaps between the U.S. position and the views of Russia and Iran. Well, there are many big stories happening online and lots of trends to follow, so we want to find out what's buzzing there. International Edition social media correspondent G. Abby Lee is here in Studio 22 to bring us the very latest. Hello, G. What's
new?
Hi,
Jim. Well, one of the top 10 shared stories on Facebook here in America has to do with a little girl fighting a rare and incurable disease. CNN did a story on Juliana, who has Charcot-Marie-Tooth disease, also known as CMT. It's a hereditary neuropathy, which means your nerves are abnormal and you get that way from your older family members.
So how did the press find out about the family?
From Juliana's mother, who has a blog. So Michelle is a neurologist and writes about the family's struggles with CMT. And one of the entries is included in the CNN article, and it's about a conversation she had with Juliana about a year ago. It goes like this. She asked, "Juliana, if you get sick again, do you want to go to the hospital or stay home?" And Juliana replied, "Not the hospital." Michelle asked, "Even if that means you'll go to heaven if you stay home?" And Juliana answered, "Yes." When Michelle elaborated, "Mommy and Daddy won't come with you right away," Juliana said, "Don't worry, God will take care of me."
A heartbreaking dialogue. Well, did the family honor her decision?
They sure did, and that's why it's making headlines. If Juliana were an adult, then of course most people would expect the parents to respect her decision, but she's 5 years old this year and was only four then, so some people feel that the parents should make decisions for her until she's grown. But Juliana's doctor apparently told Michelle and her husband Steve that there was no right or wrong answer when it comes to that question.
Mm-hmm. Obviously, it's not an easy decision for any parents to make and should ever have to make. How's Juliana doing right now?
She actually celebrated a unique anniversary last Saturday. October 24th marked a full year of Juliana not going to the hospital. And you can follow the family's journey on Michelle's blog at julianayuri.com.
A wonderful update. Thank you for that, G. And our social media guru, G. Abby Lee, is on Twitter, of course. She tweets from our program's account. That would be at VOA_IE. And you can follow her on her own account at G. Abby Lee. I'm on Twitter as well at VOA Stevenson. This is VOA.
Hello, I'm Carol Castiel, host of VOA's Encounter. Join me and two advocates from the world of politics, public policy, or academia debating critical and controversial issues of our day, bringing depth, perspective, and insight to the world around us. That's Encounter every Saturday and Sunday on VOA.
Hashtag VOA. It's a weekly show, Tuesdays at 1730 UTC, where we bring you the top topics of the week. But the show lives on social media every day with your daily video shorts, What's Trending Wednesday, and the Friday Fast Five. Subscribe to the show at YouTube. You can find us at hashtag VOA. You can reach me at Twitter, at Perry Cal, or talk to the show anytime. Please don't forget to like us on Facebook. We like to be liked. We love to be seen. And you can reach us anytime.
This is VOA's International Edition. Republican candidates for their party's nomination in the 2016 U.S. presidential race are in Colorado, and they're about to debate for the third time. VOA senior political correspondent Jim Malone is in the studio to help sort out the strategies at this point in the campaign. Jim, it appears we have a new frontrunner.
Coming into the debate, one of the people to watch for sure is Ben Carson. He's been surging in the polls, especially in the early voting state of Iowa. He's ramped up to first place showings in four polls in the last week, besting Donald Trump, and in one national poll now. He's also ahead. So Carson will be more in the spotlight. That could be good for him, but it also means that there's going to be more scrutiny. I think another person under a lot of pressure in this upcoming debate will be former Florida Governor Jeb Bush. He has not been able to resonate with Republican voters so far. He's been slipping in the polls. There's some concern now about his money-raising machine, which was very strong early on. So there's a lot of concern there. So the outsiders continue to do well, and the insiders continue to try to find a path.
And, of course, there is Donald Trump, who really has not strayed too much from his rhetoric going into this. What does Trump need to do from this point on to begin to really form himself as a more credible candidate?
Well, I wonder if he's going to be able to expand his base of support. We've seen him get into the 25% or so category and some polls up to 30%. But now with Carson surging, the possibility of Carly Fiorina having another strong debate performance, she's had a couple already, and the fact that Trump can no longer crow about the fact he's ahead in all the polls, It's a different dynamic now for him, and he's going to get more scrutiny as well with some of his policy ideas, or as his challengers would say, lack thereof, because he's not been very specific on things like even growing the economy, on how exactly he would carry out his immigration proposals. So Trump will be under some pressure in this particular debate, but he still seems to have that bedrock following with him. If that starts to ebb away, though, based on the debate performance, he could be in a different category, more of damage control.
You mentioned Jeb Bush showing perhaps some support erosion. All the other candidates that are in this race now are really kind of in a tough spot at this point.
Yeah, you know, they really have to realize that even though we keep saying it's early in the cycle, which it is, obviously people are starting to pay attention, and you can't keep going to the debates, showing up with 2 or 3% support in the polls, and not making any headway. And that goes for people like Rand Paul or Chris Christie, Mike Huckabee, John Kasich. All of them have had moments in the debates, but they haven't really had a time when they've broken through. The question for them is, can they really afford to hang in the race until the voting begins in Iowa on February 1st? And not have shown or demonstrated some ability to move up in the polls. And that will affect their fundraisers. That will affect their base of support in some of the early primary states. That being said, I mean, the way we're setting up this debate, it could be a free-for-all in a way, because so many people are going to have so much at stake that it's going to be no holds barred. And again, if you look at it, 10 people on stage, it's still an awful lot. The Republican field, you would think at some point, would start to sift itself out.
It's always fun to watch. We'll look forward to see what emerges from this debate. We'll check back with you. Always high in the poll numbers, our senior political analyst, Jim Malone. Thanks, Jim.
Thank you, Jim.
Well, from politics to the aftermath of a major earthquake that struck northern Afghanistan, and there Taliban insurgents have now overrun the district capital of Dharkhand in Takhar province. That's on the border with Tajikistan. The latest setback for Kabul comes as both the Afghan and Pakistani governments are grappling with that 7.5 magnitude quake that killed or injured thousands. Dr. Reef Noor is the country director of Mercy Corps in Islamabad. He's a veteran of the 2005 quake that crippled that same region and killed at least 75,000 people. He says the most immediate threat to the victims this time is not the Taliban, but their remoteness. That's making relief and resupply a logistical challenge, as well as the oncoming winter weather.
Luckily, the loss to life has not been as severe as was initially feared. But since the earthquake has hit primarily the areas which are very remote and very difficult to access even under normal circumstances. After the earthquake, several roads have been destroyed because of landslides and rock falls up in the mountain. And there are still very small villages which are located up in the mountains or deep in the valleys. We don't really know what's happening over there. From our experience, and we have been working in some of these districts for the past so many years, we know that initially, apart from medical help that these people need, food and water, a most important need going forward will be shelter. It's very difficult to immediately rebuild their places or build permanent shelters, sort of semi-permanent shelters. That's going to be a huge need for those areas because these are mostly up in the mountains or deep in the valleys. And the winter has already set in. And many of the areas which have been currently hit by the current earthquake were also hit by the 2005 earthquake.
What can international charity groups do, and are they beginning to respond?
Some of us, we are in the process of doing initial assessments. The government so far has, and that's a standard procedure. If a calamity is really big, then the government makes a formal appeal to the international community. So far, the government has indicated that they will be able to handle the situation themselves.
Despite the fact that some of the areas affected have been controlled by the Taliban, apparently the Taliban is encouraging everyone of goodwill to send in relief and implying that they won't hamper the relief efforts.
This is their usual tactic. They try to gain the sympathies of the local population. I'm sure you would recall the horrible incident in Peshawar when more than 100 school children were massacred by the Taliban. So after that, the army has really gone after the terrorists in a very strong and determined way. So even if they do try to hamper the relief efforts, our sense is that apart from maybe very, very small, very, very remote areas, they won't be able to do much.
Speaking with our own Victor Beatty, Dr. Arif Noor also expects the relief efforts to continue until March. That's when the weather will finally begin to improve. You're listening to International Edition. This is VOA.
News is mobile, and so are you. Get VOA on the go. Get VOA on Google Currents. Get VOA News specifically made for your tablet and smartphone. Clean, simple, fast. Now available for Android or Apple phones or tablets. Download the Google Currents app for free today. Get VOA on Google Currents at voanews.com/currents.
Hi, I'm Larry London, and I'm the host of Border Crossings, inviting you to join me for one of the best hours of request music possible on the radio. We've got all your favorite songs by your favorite singers. You tell us what to play. It's requests and dedications, and it happens every weekday right here on The Voice of America.
Fans of Adele are now no doubt happy to see the British pop singer back in the spotlight with a new album out. VOA Top 20 Countdown host Ray McDonald stops by our studio to tell us more.
Hello, it's me. I was wondering if after all these years you'd like to meet, to go over everything.
Ray, you know, I haven't heard much of Adele lately, but she's back.
Yeah, and just for those whose memories may need refreshing, back in 2011, Adele, the British pop singer, released her second album, 21, and it absolutely blew up internationally. Mm. It ended up selling 30 million copies worldwide. In 2012, Time magazine named Adele one of the most influential people in the world. And in 2013, her James Bond theme, Skyfall, earned Adele an Academy Award, a Grammy, and a Golden Globe. Mm. Now, as far as the low profile goes, in 2012, Adele and her partner, Simon Konecki, had a baby boy, Angelo. And Adele is a private person to begin with. And when Angelo was born, she really just maintained radio silence and became a mom for a couple of years. She wanted to raise her little boy. Well, now she has emerged again. This week, Adele went on Twitter to tell all her fans that her next album will be titled 25.
Sticking with the number theme.
Sticking with the age theme, exactly. Mm-hmm. It will hit the market on November 20th. And this has some significance because before this, everybody was keeping their eye on the November 13th release dates of Justin Bieber's next album and One Direction's next album. And this was supposed to be the commercial clash of the titans. Well, now Adele is the new player in the November sweepstakes. So it's really interesting now.
Hello. How are you? It's so typical of me to talk about myself. I'm sorry.
The lead single is called Hello. So that's going to be the big lead-in song. It will also feature a music video shot near Montreal, Canada. Adele posted the track listing for 25. It features 11 songs. Now, she didn't go into detail about the song credits, but those rumored to have worked with Adele on the new album include Phil Collins, Danger Mouse, Max Martin, one of the most popular and prolific songwriters in pop music, Sia, and Ryan Tedder of OneRepublic, who also worked with Adele on 21. She's calling the new album a makeup record, as opposed to 21, which was a breakup record because some guy broke her heart, and that was the inspiration for that album.
Can we expect a tour?
That's a good question. Adele is a famously private artist, and she's one of the very few artists who doesn't need to make her living from touring.
Mm-hmm.
So that's a good question. I would expect that Adele will do a few dates.
We look forward to it, as we always look forward to Ray joining us each and every week. Follow him in his Top 20 Countdown and on Twitter.
At Ray,
Ray on
the
hits. Yes.
Thank you,
Ray. You've been listening to International Edition. You can always find us at our website, voanews.com. It's always there, always ready for you. Also on the web is Twitter. Follow us at @VOA_IE. You'll receive all kinds of great information and tips on hot stories all day long by following us. We hope you do. We'd like to thank our engineer, Ida Nutku, and our director, Tracy Carter. I'm Jim Stevenson in Washington. It's looking to be a great day. I hope it's a good one for you.
Next, an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
During a recent congressional hearing, State Department officials described efforts by the United States and the international community to increase pressure on North Korea for its abysmal human rights record. State officials cited the comprehensive 2014 report by the UN Commission of Inquiry that lays bare a brutal reality. North Korea remains a totalitarian state that denies freedoms of expression, religion, peaceful assembly, association, and movement. An estimated 80,000 to 100,000 North Koreans suffer deplorable conditions in political prison camps where government officials commit human rights violations, including extrajudicial killing, enslavement, torture, prolonged arbitrary detention, rape, and forced abortions. In addition to the UN report, the United States has worked to amplify defector testimony in public forums around the world as a means of raising awareness of North Koreans who remain imprisoned. At the same time, the United States and the UN Office of the High Commissioner for Human Rights are working to document the human rights violations being perpetrated by the North Korean regime and hold those perpetrators accountable for their abuses. In an effort to put additional pressure on the North Korean regime, the United States has supported annual resolutions condemning the human rights situation in North Korea in both the UN General Assembly and the Human Rights Council. The mounting criticism of the North Korean regime's human rights record has had an effect, said Special Envoy for North Korean Human Rights Issues Robert King. With a growing number of countries condemning North Korea's human rights violations, North Korea has very few supporters left. The few countries that voted against resolutions critical of North Korea are among the world's worst human rights violators. King said the North Korean people deserve to hear the truth. That's why the United States continues to support the broadcasting of news and information about the world to North Koreans through radio broadcasts by Voice of America and Radio Free Asia. North Korea must address its egregious human rights violations. The choice is clear: investment in its people, respect for human rights, and concrete steps towards denuclearization can lead to peace, prosperity, and improved relations with the United States. Absent these measures, North Korea will only face increased isolation.
That was an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.